Welcome to, well, that fucked me up.
It really did.
A podcast with Luke Coulson.
And Kyle Wise.
And each week we're going to be talking to real guests about their amazing, often traumatic, life-changing events.
Focusing on stories of survival, hope, and overall triumph.
Which is flipping awesome.
Yeah.
Because we're all about that. We're all about listening to people's stories about adversity and trauma and crazy stuff. I think there really is something for everybody. There's many, many topics, many, many guests, people that really have got through some extraordinary things. Please share the love, share the show, get in touch, follow us, subscribe, click. We're trying to make it easy and open for people to discuss things that may normally feel tricky to do so. We've been on an extraordinary journey and we're glad you can join us. Enjoy the show. Welcome to another episode of, well, that fucked me up, with your hosts, Luke Coulson.
And Kyle Wise.
Hi, Kyle Wise.
Hey, Luke Coulson.
I've done a few of these on my own and it's nice to have you back. And I always forget how to introduce it with you there, sitting with your little smiley face up there. It's lovely. Hello. How have you been, Kyle?
I'm good. Good. Just doing the work in school, man.
Oh, man. Back to school. I don't envy you, but also good. Good that you're back to school. Today's guest is Ivan Luis Hernandez. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Ivan, where are you situated in the world?
I'm in Miami.
Nice. How's Miami?
I love Miami.
It's busy. We've got a lot of people coming this way. So Miami is popping as usual, but especially popping within the last year or two.
Right. Yes, I can imagine. And it's kind of all year sun there. It's supposed to be, we're in LA. It's supposed to be like that here, but it's positively fucking freezing in December and January. I say that obviously not in the English terms of the word, because that's really freezing. But Miami's warm, isn't it, for most of the year?
It is. Yeah. And you know, we've got our sporadic showers as usual. It'll be a nice sunny day and then it monsoons out of nowhere, but then it clears up. So
throw in a couple of tornadoes and some hurricanes and you got Miami right there.
Totally. That's right. Just prepare for anything. But just focus on having a good time and the weather will sort itself out somehow.
I love it. Thanks for coming on our podcast. Our show is all about surviving life-changing events and experiences. We have a guest on every week, and that guest would have been through something, and we have them come on, like just like you are now, to talk about anything from something happened when you were a child, can be a one-off event, can be a whole life experience, can be something you're still going through, can be a series of stuff, and then we kind of concentrate on what happened, how you got through it or getting through it, and kind of the journey out the other side. And that's the exact point that an airplane decides to fly outside my front door, but there we go. Such is life. So with that, Ivan, where would you like to begin?
First off, I just want to say thanks for having me, not in like the sort of normal, random, you know, polite, generic phrase. There are so many people out there dealing with heart disease and dealing with it, I'm learning, in secret.
Wow.
Hiding it from the family, from their coworkers, because it's just, you know, this sort of inferiority complex that I suffered from and a lot of patients suffer from. You just sort of feel weak or like a ticking time bomb or like a liability. And so I'm really happy you all decided to do this. I know you've had one other heart episode, but this also is therapy for me, kind of sharing it with whomever is out there living with it in secret or not. So,
well, thank you. We love that. Thanks. We love that. And also we love it when we have male guests. Kyle and I like to see ourselves as like vulnerable, outspoken men flying the flag for, you know, because stuff, you just said it, Ivan, suffering in silence. Don't you think, Kyle? It's not very healthy, is it?
No. It's funny because I think as we kind of move into the 2023, like people are more talking about mental health, but they're not talking about heart health or lung health or, you know, physical ailments. Mm. You know, there's still this kind of macho, nothing can hurt me.
Totally. So how, you've kind of given us a little insight into what your episode is going to be about. Tell us where all this started.
Yeah, well, I was born with a heart defect. And so the doctors handed me to my mom and said, this baby may die and have, you know, heart failure. The likelihood is very high. And so, so I was born already sort of, you know, at risk. And a big task force of doctors was working on my case with my family in determining, you know, how I was going to make it. And they put me on some meds, which nobody can remember what they were called. I just remember seeing pictures of me as a baby with like my mouth red, because that was one of the side effects. But to this day, I don't know what the heck I was taking, but it was working because this task force of doctors at the University of Miami, I see medical reports that use words like miraculous because I had, for some reason, overcome some of the impossible. And I was like going about a normal, like, you know, toddler life.
That's amazing.
To the point where, you know, as a teen, I was super active, overly active. I was running long distance cross country. I was in Taekwondo competing. I was, you know, playing flag football, soccer, volleyball. So the Boy Scouts, like you name it. And as far as I knew as a kid, you know, nothing was wrong with me, but I'd get these reminders, you know, my mom would scream at my bigger cousin saying, don't scare him on Halloween because he has heart problems. And I'm like, no, scare me. Like, I like being scared. What are you talking about? And so, you know, I'd be reminded of it and just think, really? I do? Was getting my heart checked every year. So I kind of got used to it as a kid. And, but, you know, that competitiveness kind of spilled into like my academic and professional life. And I was really ambitious. And pushing myself always more than the average person, I would say. Again, not recognized. I had no symptoms. You know, nothing's wrong with me. Let's go. You know, at the time, my dad had, around my 20s, I should say, my dad had heart failure. And I saw him living on life support with the pack. You know, barely able to sort of walk and, you know, lost everything, you know, financially, and we all we had to sort of recalibrate our whole life, our entire life. And so I had seen what that looks like. And eventually he had a transplant. So like from the life support to like the page on, hey, your heart's here, come now. So I'd lived through that, you know, helping to pay the bills to keep, you know, the whole family system intact. And so I saw all that happening, but as far as I was concerned, that could never happen to me because I was like superhuman. Everything healed on its own. So part of that superhumanness, I went and to the Navy office one day to enlist as an officer. And I was really excited because the recruiter took my resume and started flaunting it around the office because I had some really cool jobs. You know, working on some cool productions and at the Screen Actors Guild. I wanted to be an entertainment lawyer and, you know, and I was like, I got this. It's in the bag. And so I went through some of the physicals and they said, no, we heard something weird in your heart. So I felt really bummed. Because that was a, that wasn't like my mom saying to my cousin, don't scare him. He has our problems. That was like a, Ivan, this is a major reality, and this is going to keep you from opportunities.
Can I ask Can I ask a quick question before you move forwards, just for context? Sorry to interrupt your flow, because but when you were growing up, you said that your mum said, "Don't scare Ivan because he has a heart problem." But how much did you know about your story as a baby? And had your mum or had the doctors ever said, "By the way, be careful"? As you're growing up, or go light on exercise, or had it just literally been, he's good, he's made it, he can live, lead a normal life? Like, how much were you aware of actually what you'd been through as a baby? And sorry to backtrack slightly, but.
No, I've never reflected on that point. So I'm glad you brought that up. I was, you know, ignorance is bliss, right? Especially when you're young. And so, and I was also at an age where I was very hard-headed. I should say I was hard-headed growing up, because I, you know, adults don't know what they're talking about, right? Like, I'm going to do this. You know, my parents don't know what they're talking about. You know, like every teen and young person feels, right? At one point, it's like, I know what I'm doing. I don't need advice. I feel fine. So people were telling me, take it easy. Are you sure you want to go on that massive hike with the Boy Scouts? Are you sure you want to go to Halloween Horror Nights at Disney where they scare the shit out of you every 5 seconds, right? Are you sure you want to go on that roller coaster? So there was always this, like, be careful with Ivan.
Right.
But I felt it was insulting. For a few reasons that you can probably imagine, you know, a lot of sort of cultural layers, right? Mm-hmm. There's the, just, you know, the masculine layer that we all live through, right? In terms of be tough, don't be vulnerable, don't show weakness, right? JFK was on the floor lying down before speeches, getting painkillers injected into him right before he stood up at a podium to address the nation at times, right? Like, that's the culture for people in general, for leaders. But you know, I think we come from a society where men are expected to only be strong. Then you've got the Latino layer, which I'll call, I think I have a license to call machismo, right? Where, you know, my uncles would ask me, how many girlfriends do you have? And there's this, like, you know, you got to support all these women. And it's, so you've got all these cultural layers and, you know, where I was just on this, you know, on this journey of, you know, it's not even an option for me to show weakness or to admit to having a heart issue.
Got it.
Becomes really interesting later on.
Okay, thanks for the backtrack. That's cool. So yeah, and I guess the Navy was the first time where suddenly you're thinking, well, hold on a second. Right before then, you hadn't seen any reality of what you might have heard had happened when you were a child, right?
Totally.
Wow.
Exactly. Wow. That was my first, my first experience as an adult, making an adult decision where someone other than family was telling me,
wow,
no, dude, you can't do this. Wow. And
go on, Kyle.
So
Kyle has a question. Go, Kyle.
I was just going to ask, so was it almost like, because I can relate to that, obviously not that specifically, but it's almost like, if they tell you, you know, go easy, it makes you want to go extra hard. It makes you, like, want to prove them wrong.
Mm.
Yes. And that's exactly, very well put, that's exactly the spirit that I felt I had to live. And to the point where, after that, I was recruited by a nutrition company, by a family that created this really great tasting product. Global company, and I took the job, and again, it kind of fit within my lifestyle, strength, and right. And at the time, I wanted to start training to compete in regional CrossFit tournaments. CrossFit had just started becoming a thing, and so I went to this company, had a great career path, moved to New York. I was at the peak of my career, traveling all the time, everywhere, and that year, I go to have my echo done, and my doctor comes in with a serious face.
Oof.
And I'm like on my computer, you know, like sending emails. And okay, is everything good? Can I go now? Because, you know, every year I've been having these tests, right? For me, it's like just routine. And he's like, well, your heart has expanded. It's grown in size, which means it's weakening.
Shit.
And so your valve, which was my mitral valve, not to get so technical and boring with this, but mitral valve,
good to know,
was regurgitating, which means, you know, leaking, not closing properly. Ooh. So blood was regurgitating backwards, instead of just forward. And it's like no valve was there. It was severely regurgitating.
Oh my God.
You know, you go from like trace to mild to moderate to severe.
Yeah.
Mine was like super severe, like if there was no valve there. And I'm like dumbfounded because I was working out sometimes even twice a day, which I don't recommend for anybody, by the way. But, you know, around athletes and influencers that we were signing and even our team, right? We were all very competitive and we lived the lifestyle of the brand we were growing and building. So I walked out of there in shock, and I was just sort of walking aimlessly. And, you know, they basically said, you have to have surgery, and not just surgery, minimally invasively, you have to have the old fashioned open heart surgery because your valve is defective. It's weird. And the head of cardiothoracic surgery at NYU said, I've got to go in there manually to fix it. I can't do something because it's, we want to try to repair it. If we replace it, there's more risk, et cetera. So heard the news of the surgery, and I was keeping it a secret from everyone.
Oh my gosh.
I went to work, went about my day, and knowing that I had to have open heart surgery. And so I hid it from everybody, including my friends and family.
Oh my God.
And I went on vacation with my friends, I had scheduled the surgery, and I went on vacations with a group of friends and didn't tell them anything.
What?
And then finally just realized I had to tell my employer. And I shared it, and I kind of had them promise not to tell anybody. So my team that reported into me did not know.
Wow.
I just went on vacation.
Yeah.
And then had the surgery, recovered, came out of it with some friends really pissed off that I had gone into it secretly.
Wow.
And tried to return to normal life, and went after a few weeks where I felt recovered, started to work again and live my life again, and pretend like nothing had happened, and went to a convention in Vegas. Felt really tired and excused myself from the team. And then flew back because I had to rest.
Yeah.
But so that was surgery number one. And
can I just was it? And I know that we're only, there's more. So, but I do want to ask you as we go, like, you talked about like machismo or the indoctrination of being a man. How traumatizing do you think that was for you to have the burden of this thing? Not only that you felt like you had a weakness in your heart and you didn't want to tell anybody, but then have to go that kind of major type of operation alone because you didn't want to admit to anyone that you had a heart problem.
Extraordinarily traumatic.
Wow.
Which finally hit me a few years later.
Right. Often does.
At the time.
Yeah.
At the time, I thought going back to normal as quickly as possible was going to heal me.
Yeah.
Right.
But I learned that catches up with you. And, you know, the universe told me, okay, so since you didn't learn the first time to slow down and open up and be honest, here's a second surgery for you. So I was texting this time during my echocardiogram, a colleague of mine, that's right. How routine these things were.
Wow.
And the nurse says, let me call the doctor. The technician says, let me call the doctor. Oof. And I dropped my phone and I said, no. And doctor comes in, same story. The repair had broken, so it failed.
Wow.
And so they had to go in a second time and do a replacement.
Oh my God.
At this point, I was living in Los Angeles, been recruited to go work over there, made a new group of friends, right? Living my life, kind of, you know, about this great place and establishing my new, you know, new fixed valve life. And I was just, you know, working out all the time. Mm. I felt like the fittest and the healthiest I'd ever been.
Wow.
And so again, it was a shock because I had zero symptoms, but I was a walking ticking time bomb.
Fuck.
And so, you know, you read about marathon runners who have like sudden death from mitral valve prolapse or whatnot that they've never discovered. And that, you know, that could have been me.
Totally.
And so went in and had a second surgery. And this is where my story, this is where I'll just stop sort of the whole chronological order of things. Sorry that it's so long. Had the second surgery and they replaced my valve. And I thought again, let me get back to normal. This time I told more people, I was more open. I needed the support. Yeah. I had learned the hard way.
Yeah.
But little did I know that that second surgery would be extremely difficult. Wow. It turns out that my ejection fraction, which is a measure of how good your heart's performing, not to get so technical, dropped, which is a sign of heart failure.
Fuck.
And that's the news that I had heard when my dad had heart failure and eventually had a transplant, where I saw him walking around with a life support bag. And so I walked out of the hospital that day, and when people tell you the world was spinning, I know exactly what they mean. And it's because you're so disoriented that you don't know where to walk, what to do, who to call,
oh my God,
where to go, where you are.
Yeah.
I forgot where, if I had parked or Ubered, but I thought, I'm dying.
Your whole nervous system had taken over your body. Go on, Kyle.
So like you obviously had like, your family was aware of what was going on, or did you keep that kind of from them? Or
they did not know, and on this call,
so you were alone.
On this episode, they will probably learn for the first time.
Wow.
Everything that actually happened, because they knew, they didn't know the full extent of all of it. They don't know the full extent of all of it.
Oh, this is an exclusive. that's
so you were carrying that burden by yourself.
Yeah.
Yes, Kyle. The other thing that happened was I was on a conference call with a client and I had started consulting and my heart just started to jigger randomly, like if it was in my throat.
Oh my God.
And I couldn't focus and I was like, what is happening? And I thought, great. Do I have, atrial fibrillation, which is, it's very, very, very like livable. There's a ton of remedies for atrial fibrillation. Nobody should freak out if they have AFib, right? It's, you have to be careful, but there's a ton of stuff that help you with AFib. But I thought, do I have one of these other conditions now on top of these valve surgeries? And they kept happening. So it turns out that I was having PVCs, which some people have PVCs. Again, not to get technical, but they're just like extra beats that kind of annoy you and feel weird when they drink too much caffeine. That's one of the most common reasons people get PVCs.
Yeah.
Amongst some other things, but that's one of the most known reasons. But they found out that my PVCs were coming from a place in my heart, a very small place that was scarred, not from a surgery, but from a minor heart attack that happened after the surgery.
Oh my gosh.
No one knows.
Oh my gosh.
And so that's when I realized that that's when everything really changed.
Mm.
And I went from, it really, really, really consumed me. Mm. And I was trying to be the Ivan that was very professional, very ambitious, very competitive. Mm. I put so much value in like my own name and my own brand that I just felt I couldn't let anyone down.
Mm.
I couldn't show weakness, right? Finally, that all caught up with me. And I was going to the emergency room. I went 11 times in 1 month. Telling them that I was having a heart attack, that my heart was not functioning properly. And finally, this incredible ER doctor, she comes up to me and says, it's not your heart. And she points to her head.
Oh, shit.
And I consider myself to be a pretty rational guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But at the time, when you're, when PTSD is taking over your entire life, you're not rationalizing.
Yeah.
And it just took that moment for me to realize, oh, it's my head. That's why I'm in the emergency room all the time, because I have PTSD. And so I started to realize that I was afraid to leave the house.
Oh my God.
Went to the grocery store and felt really paranoid. I said, what if something happens and I collapse here in front of everybody in the grocery store and cause a commotion? I went on a date and pictured myself being rolled out on a stretcher, and I had to cancel the date.
Oh my God.
And I said, so no more dates, no more grocery stores, right? I, little by little, became no more anything where I was just home and it became agoraphobia.
Kyle, you had a question?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was just like, it seems like your whole life has kind of been leading you up to that, because you were told, you know, be careful, like, you know. And so you, I mean, it sounds like you kind of finally just broke. You were kind of like...
It's also amazing how you went from invincible, even after your first surgery, and everything's fine and nothing can touch me, to after the second surgery, that information about the heart attack, where it just finally the floodgates opened. And it's almost like suddenly you were completely polar opposite. And your brain starts fucking with you, right? And saying, you're going to die. You're going to die. That's your heart. That's your heart. That's your heart. That's your heart. Every time you try and move. What was the time frame between first and second surgery? Just out of interest, just wondering how that lineage went.
4 years.
Wow. So that 4 years was like, it's just amazing. The brain is insane, isn't it? Was it all in your head, or do you think they were obviously you were having physical feelings and physical reactions to what was in your head, but was that more like panic attacks then, do you think? That was getting you into the ER all those times?
Yeah, and this is why I feel this episode is really important for just specifically a lot of heart patients that I speak with in private.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people need this information. There isn't that much education around how a patient can distinguish the symptoms of your heart from your mind.
Wow.
And I'm not alone when I confuse those symptoms, right? And there's a ton of people who go to the emergency room having an anxiety attack, saying they think they're having a heart attack.
Yes, totally.
And so there is a crossover there, right? But yes, the majority of the time when I was going to the emergency room, it was the PTSD and it was the anxiety and the depression that was kicking in. And I remember one day I was going to go to the emergency room and I was going to drive myself there. And I said, let me get an Uber because I need somebody in the car and I don't want to call somebody else and get them nervous.
Yeah.
And I don't want to call the ambulance and have them pull up and embarrass me in front of the whole neighborhood, like the guy that goes to the emergency room every day. And so, you know, there's a lot wound up in that. But I do have to say that this is incredibly common with heart patients. You know, depending on which report you read, anywhere between 15 to 60% of heart patients suffer from anxiety and depression. Right.
I
think it's closer to,
I can understand that.
And I went to some amazing facilities and I have some of the best doctors in the world. And they're just busy focusing on your heart.
Yeah.
There is such a need for just awareness around mental health. Something as simple as before a patient goes into surgery, you know, there's a stress around, here are the things that can happen in depression and anxiety, and but here are the things that you can do. It's temporary and there are solutions, and here's a toolbox. And I've got a whole toolbox.
Well, shouldn't they? I see what you're saying, and you would imagine that shouldn't the two have always been connected? Like, shouldn't the two, if you have a massive physical ailment or a physical accident, heart disease, stroke, car accident, mental health should go hand in hand with that, shouldn't it? Because it's going to be traumatizing any which way you look at it.
Yes. And Kyle, the challenge that I realize with that is our systems and our hospitals and our doctors are very, very busy, right? And in many cases overworked. And they have a job to do, and the best they can do is focus on the thing that you're going to them for. And refer you to a specialist or a therapist or whatnot, right? And so, but there's a major opportunity because, you know, I think of Robin Williams when he had his surgery and he was on a talk show and he joked about, in his own way, right? He joked about that he was so emotional after surgery. He doesn't know what they put in him. He's like, I don't think they put a valve in me. I think they put, he was kind of crass about it. And this is a little bit sexist, but it was Robin Williams. So it's Robin Williams, sure, right? Sure. I'm not saying. He goes, I think they put little vaginas in my valves instead of a valve because I feel so soft and I feel so, you know, and he said he was emotional at everything, every turn. And disclaimer though, I don't want to equate, you know, being emotional and in touch with their feelings or soft with feminine women.
We understand. But,
you know, it's Robin Williams and he was trying to give an analogy that says, something happened to me after that.
Yeah.
And in his own way, he did put it perfectly because there are emotional triggers right after heart surgery that are pretty inexplicable. Mm. And whether that comes from being on the heart and lung machine, medications, or anesthesia, right? Mm. We don't know exactly what, if it's one or all of those things.
Yeah.
But what I do know is that all of that is temporary. And the beautiful thing that has come out of that is I actually feel like I have a superpower.
Wow.
And it's stronger than what I used to feel like when I thought I was invincible and no one's going to convince me I have heart issues. Because now I have conversations with people and I can tell the first time I meet them just how they're interacting with me. And if they're super present, that they have been through something just as deep.
Actually,
I connect on an intimate level with people, if I'm going on a date or whatnot, with people who have some texture in their life now. Mm-hmm. Because I connect with that. And that's like a superpower.
Yeah.
And I think back to some of the worst moments of PTSD, right? This is why I call it a superpower. And, you know, I have that cliche dark figure that was always coming into my dreams.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the last nightmares I had with that dark figure was I was running and it actually ran in my direction. And for the first time, this is a recurring dream with this dark figure. For the first time, I crashed into it and went through it. Whoa. And I woke up.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
And I don't know what real meaning or premonitions nightmares have, right? But I can say that since that moment, I've interpreted what I've been through as a blessing and a superpower.
We've had that from a lot of our guests. And also that's why Kyle and I we love connecting with all our guests, but guys like you who feel that sense of vulnerability talking to people that have been through some stuff. I feel like we just need to take a step back before we talk about, you know, you've mentioned like tools and what brought you to that point. I kind of feel like we cut off your story at the worst part where you weren't leaving the house and you become agoraphobic. Not to, we just got to some good stuff, not to take us, all our listeners, all the way back to the bad stuff again. But what did the journey at, from your very lowest low rock bottom agoraphobia, where the whole thing consumed you, how quickly, when was that, and how was that journey to get to where you are today?
Thank you. And that's the most important part that I want, like, your listeners to hear. I need to just say this real fast. If anyone's listening to this and they're like, well, I've never had heart issues and I don't have any family who have heart issues, it's so common that I think everyone should have this awareness and preparedness. Yeah. If it were to happen. And I don't want to scare anybody, sure, but, you know, 7% of the world's population has some sort of heart disease. It's the number one, wow, it's the number one killer, and it doesn't have to be. Mm. And so, you know, when I was at my worst, some of the things that I was at a point where I was calling on all powers of the universe. Mm-hmm. I, for the first time, you know, I went from being that, like, annoying, like, too busy for Reiki and meditation guy, yeah, to, like, bring it on, and just, like, bring it here. Like, you, yeah, do Reiki, come to my house 5 times a week.
I love it.
And so I had my toolbox included therapy. Mm. I finally saw a therapist. Mm. And she was fantastic. I did take meds. Mm-hmm. Because, in short, my brain had short-circuited, I learned. Mm. And the meds took me out of that to be able to start leaving the house and getting back into a routine, mm-hmm, that felt comfortable enough to then overcome the needs for the meds. So I was able to wean off the meds, but I wouldn't have been able to get out if I didn't get on the meds. So it was a necessary, for me, evil, because I don't like taking meds. Mm-hmm. So the meds were a very good instrument. We just have to be careful, right? We don't want to become dependent on anything.
Yeah. Well, I think we're big fans of, obviously, let's not start saying we're big fans of opioids and things like that, but antidepressants, anti-anxieties, you know, something I'm very happy to tell people that I've been on antidepressants, a small dose, for 10, 15 years, and it saved my life. So, you know,
yeah,
I hear you.
Amen. And meditation, I went to a transcendental meditation group of other people suffering from all kinds of PTSD. Mm. And for the first time ever, you know, I used to say that the madness was within me, because people would say, just meditate. But I would meditate and I'd feel my heart beating, and it would remind me that I have this heart that, wow, has problems. And so I couldn't meditate.
Wow.
But for the first time ever, transcendental taught me to disconnect with the beating of my heart in a negative way.
Kyle, you got to step in. You do that stuff, don't you? Don't you?
Yeah, hi, TM.
Yeah,
that's why I was waiting for a spot. I love TM.
Yeah,
nice.
Yeah,
that makes me very, very, and very happy.
And I was gonna say, and sorry to make this a bit more conversational, but I was just, since we're all here, is just being too busy, like you were, never stopping, which can be considered motivation, like you're full of motivation. There's a point where it's, you're running away from the pause. We had a guest on, yes, who kept herself so busy. She was a fitness instructor, a boxer, and she got injured. And in the time where she sat in her own space for the first time in 20 years, was the first time she'd been injured. She had a complete and utter, like, traumatic, like, breakdown. All this stuff came flooding into her brain. And she was like, I was inadvertently, subconsciously not letting that happen. I was keeping myself so busy. And in the same way that I kept my brain away from its thoughts by drinking, and we've had people on who have done the same through taking drugs, in a way you were doing the same thing with go, 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 busy, 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 fitness, 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 because you're delaying the inevitable trauma. And therefore, when it does finally catch up with you, is magnet.
That's exactly right.
Crazy. Yeah. It's terrifying, isn't it?
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
I just wanted to say that while because when you were talking about how then you were too busy for, I'm too busy to therapy. I'm too busy, but now you're like, I bring it.
Doing it all.
The funny thing is, Kyle, the doctors and nurses were saying, you have to go to cardiac rehab. And I was like, I work out like all the time, sometimes twice a day. Like, I don't need rehab, right? I was still fighting it. And so finally, when the PTSD and agoraphobia hit, I was like, where do I go? Where do I sign up? And I'll never forget, they walked me over to the cardiac rehab floor. And I'm kind of a nervous wreck because I'm like, I'm going to pass out on this bike. I can't work out. I can't walk, right? I'm not myself still. And they open the door. The nurse opens the door to let me in. And I look around and I see a lot of older people, bless their hearts, older, beautiful people going through the same stuff I was going through, right? Mm-hmm. But they're mostly in their 70s, 80s, 90s. Some of them have oxygen tanks.
Yeah.
And I remember, and I love these people to death, right? But I'm a young guy in my 30s. So I remember closing the door, and I don't know why, I just thought of the scene, like Sister Act, when Whoopi Goldberg, like the detective takes Whoopi Goldberg to the church to hide her.
Yeah.
And she's like, they cut to her walking out, and she's like, these people don't even have sex. Like, get me out of here.
Yeah.
I kind of closed the door and I was like, no, this is going too far.
That's
like,
funny. Yeah.
I am not that. I'm not a heart patient.
Yeah.
And that's where I realized,
wow,
I'm in denial.
Yeah.
And wow, this nurse, she was incredibly thoughtful and very intelligent and very smart. And she got me back into that room. And it is, and I feel so grateful for her to this day, because it is the best thing I could have done. It actually made me regain my confidence and start to regain my ability to just walk down the street without thinking I was going to collapse.
Wow.
How
long's this been? One
of the best things in my toolbox.
How long's the journey been then, since you kind of started to regain faith in yourself, start to accept this denial? I think it's the first time we've used that word, but yes, denial, and start to realize that you could actually use everything that's happened to you up to this point for good, for positive. Because just hearing you talk about like superpower, and that Kyle and I often always say, like, it's not a blessing to be born with a defective heart. It's not a blessing to have gone through what you've gone through. But we often think, if this is what had to happen to get me to a point where I'm present and I'm aware, yes, and I feel warmth towards other people, where I never had that before in my entire life, then that's what needed to happen, you know?
Yeah.
You know, it took me 9 months to finally feel like my life was back on track.
Mm.
I don't want to say back to normal.
Mm.
Definitely a new normal.
Mm.
With a whole new level of understanding of who I was,
wow,
what was important in life. And, you know, the other thing in my toolbox is an 100-pound chocolate lab who's snoring right next to me.
Uh-huh.
You know, that I adopted when I was going through all this. And he was a great distraction. You know, instead of thinking my heart's going to explode every morning, I was like, where did he pee? Where did he poop?
Yeah. You know, and yeah, and distraction and also affection, you know, perspective.
Yes.
It's lovely.
Yeah. And so I think, and the reason I mention him is because, you know, one of the things that I started to do on the hospital bed was journaling.
Mm.
And I, on my phone, in the notes section, the notes app, and I started to realize, like, when I put my emotions on the phone, on, let's call it paper, like outside of my head for a second, and I looked at them, it was like this objective point of view where I could then rationalize my thoughts.
Yep.
And that's how I learned that journaling isn't just sort of like, you know, a pretty word, right?
Yeah.
It's really, really instrumental. And, you know, I think the 9 months was the period, but the maintenance or sort of the retention mechanisms to not go back, because I still have those nightmares every now and then. You know, there's still remnants of PTSD that are certainly always going to be there. But having, you know, tools like knowing what the toolbox is, right? And I can go to all these things when I need them, but also journaling my thoughts and always taking them outside of my head for a second was really great. And I actually ended up taking that journaling to another level and writing stories and getting myself sort of as an escape, but more therapy. I hate to use the word escape. And I ended up writing a book on my dad's life as a spy.
Get out of here.
Of 400 pages and getting a publisher. Like,
what?
I would have never written a book if it weren't for having gone through this.
No.
So,
wow. You kind of got your life back in a way. You've finally been given a break. Like, life is more than go, go, go. Like, life is so much more than you being in your own head and going at a million miles an hour, right? But and unless something stops us in our tracks sometimes, we don't know. Do you think, Kyle?
Yeah, well, and that's kind of what I was going to ask you, is like, what does your life look like now?
Good question.
Like, what are you, you know, you overcame all of this, you kind of opened yourself up to the universe. Like, what does your day-to-day look like now? Like, what do you...
Yeah, and are there any restrictions in terms of how you have to live, knowing your condition? Or have we forgotten about that and you're back at the gym 3 times a day?
It was 2, not 3.
Okay, sorry, 2. So you've upped it. I'm saying you've upped it now to 3.
You know, it's... I'm going to try to keep this short so I don't drag this on, but it's a new normal, but it's a better normal. It's a more aware normal. It's a more careful, thoughtful, and inclusive, like, normal. I make decisions a lot more with my heart and not just, you know, my head. And as ironic as that sounds, in my
case,
and you know, the way my life changed drastically was, instead of just being very career focused, which I was, I started to freelance and work on my own as a consultant to make my own schedule so that I could manage my health and balance all of that much better. And thankfully, I made a successful business out of that for 6 years with some great, understanding, supportive clients. The second thing is, I have written this book and have already started to, you know, tee up a teaser for a second one, a historical fiction book on, you know, some cool characters around the World War II era.
Wow.
And the third thing is, you know, I've been working closely with the American Heart Association on different initiatives. And, you know, they did a cool cover story on my mental health journey. And, and you know, I'm looking to, later in the year, actually launch a supplement that's patent pending for heart patients to give them energy without things that could freak you out, like caffeine that could give you palpitations, or carbonation that could feel, you know, the gas in your chest can make you feel like you're having chest pains. So without any of those things that heart patients want or need, but there are certain things that give you energy without tricking you into to thinking you have more energy than you should be exerting.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. So, I mean, wow. That's just what a, it's so
amazing.
It, you know, this episode has been wonderful because it's the absolute epitome of what we do on this show, which is showing how what at one point, right, you were at the end. At one point, you were like, I've got a heart, the realization, the physical heart defect, the open heart surgery, the trauma and trying to keep it all to yourself, the weight of all of that, then all of the mental health, the panic attacks, the agoraphobia. Dude, it could not, it could have gone a very different way for you. And the fact that you're here to tell your story and talking about like the richness of your life, the vulnerability and what you'd kind of wish you'd just blurted it out sooner, that it's okay for guys as well to be, put your hand up. I'm not well. I'm feeling weak, or I've got a fucking heart problem, you know?
That's right.
And, but we're all human and people don't know to do that. And you, and often you don't know to do that until it's too late. And thankfully for you, it wasn't too late and that you survived to tell the tale, but it's an amazing story. So thank you for sharing it with us.
Thank you.
And before we sign off, did we miss anything? Have we left anything off? And when we put our show notes together, we'll obviously make sure everyone has a way to find you. We'll share any social media, any website, any information about your book, any information about heart. We'd love to have that article somehow if you have a link to that as well. But did we miss anything?
I guess the only thing I want to say is, you know, 18 million people die a year from heart issues. Mm. And many of them don't have to die. And I hope that, you know, this and, you know, some of the future initiatives that I'm trying to work on can get us to a point where people aren't so afraid to look into their hearts and see how it's working.
Yeah.
And, you know, living with a defibrillator or on medications or whatever is not scary at all. Mm. And it's perfectly normal. It's why science exists, and it doesn't make anybody weaker.
Mm.
Right. Yeah. We don't need to have 18 million people gone. We can have a lot of people that have sort of this newfound way of thinking and seeing the world and giving back.
Mm.
And I'm out there hopefully helping some people who are keeping this secret because they feel vulnerable or inferior, that they actually have to tell them that they actually have a superpower. And if they don't feel that now, that will certainly happen. Wow. I never thought, I had a friend who told me, you're going to look back on this moment and be so grateful for it. When I was in the deep part of my funk, and I looked at him and said in my head, you have absolutely no fucking clue what I'm going through right now.
Yeah, yeah.
But he could not have been more right.
Wow.
I'm actually grateful for that.
Wow. That's...
To answer your question, Kyle, I can live my life normally, right? So long as I don't think about having had heart issues all the time.
Yeah.
That's what interfered with my life.
Yeah. Wow. Well, I mean, Ivan, this is brilliant. I think this is a good time to sign off. Just what you said about the heart issues and it being a superpower and don't live in fear, say something, speak to someone. I think Kyle and I just want to reiterate the same goes for all the mental health, the mental health stuff as well. You know, it's like I for sure suffered for 10 years when I just, if I could have just fucking come out and said to someone, I'm having a really tough fucking time. Instead, I just ran away. I ran away from it all. And then it all came crashing down, you know, and I'm here to tell the tale. Kyle's here to tell the tale from his story. And here you are as well, Ivan. So thank you. This has been a fantastic episode. And we must get you back on. Certainly if you're writing book number two as well, I feel like we've got million more questions. But again, thank you so much. This has been fantastic.
Thank you, guys. Super appreciative, and for what you're doing. And if there's other ways that I can help, you know, feel free to reach out. I'd love to make sure that you guys can continue to keep this going.
We appreciate it.
So, absolutely.
Thank you so much. Thank you.